Some days ago, I had a conversation with someone about the collect for Ash Wednesday, the opening prayer, and the words acknowledging our wretchedness seemed to be an anachronism. Something no longer applies because, well, we've been saved. We've been saved through the death and resurrection of Christ. We've been washed clean in baptism. We've been given the gift of the Spirit. We've been fed with the body and blood of Christ. We live in hope of the resurrection. We're not wretched. This led me to think about what this word actually means to us today, if anything. And first of all, I think that to say that we are wretched goes back to a kind of preaching, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with, that you are all wretched sinners, and that God is going to judge you if you don't get right with God in this church right now. Does this sound kind of familiar? I'm not good at that kind of preaching, but it's easy. This is the whole thing about, you know, we're bad and we're evil and we're nasty. I'm not going to say that's not true, but there's a certain manipulative power to that kind of blaming us for being wretched. And there's a flip side to that, the other side of the coin, which is something called the prosperity gospel, which is very, very popular. In other words, if you come and join my church and you do things our way and you give your tithe and everything else, God will bless you just as God has blessed me, your pastor, with my Rolex watch and my diamond ring and my beautiful bride and my lovely children, because we are faithful people and do it our way and you will get rich. This is the kind of stuff that's preached in a lot of places. We could say, yes, across Africa, South America, but especially in the land of its origin, the United States of America. That is really wretched, and it is also manipulative. No, I don't think that we can really talk about wretchedness in this either sense, except how it is possible to be manipulated in a church. So, here we are on Ash Wednesday, a day we're invited to think about our relationship to God. Many years ago, a well-known English theologian pointed out that we tend to react to God in the way that our government is structured. So if you're living in a country with a divine right monarch, then the confession of sin in the traditional language rite that says that we have offended against God's holy laws, that we provoked most justly God's wrath and indignation against us because we provoked God's divine majesty. And we were talking about Henry VIII, aren't we? Or Elizabeth I. And what kind of God do we have today? It's all too often the welfare state, the nanny state, of God who loves you and takes care of you and supports you no matter what. And, you know, it just goes on and on like that. And the fact of the matter is that we are sinners. I am. What does that mean? It means that from time to time, I choose to do what I know is wrong because the benefit seems so immediate. It's a shortcut. It's cutting corners. Or it's doing something by not doing it, the same exact thing you know you should do, but you don't because it's too difficult, it's too expensive, it's too this, it's too that. That's what sin's all about. And what happens is that, yes, we get the immediate short-term benefit, but then the long-term consequences come home to roost. And that's where this word wretchedness, I think, has real relevance to me, and I dare say, to you. That there just has to be a time when you figure out that, in fact, the way I've been behaving just hasn't really done me any good in the end. Felt good at the time, not now. So we need to come to a place where we get beyond this idea that we are sinners, without, as I said, you know, getting manipulated into our wretchedness, into giving more money to the church, because I frankly don't care, or joining my church because it's not my business whose church you belong to. Well, that is God's business. But what is really important to me, and I think to you, is that we be real with God, that we take this seriously, that indeed the love of God is there for us all the time. You can't turn it off. You can't stop it. That's true. But what's also true is that if God actually loves us, then God gets angry with us in the things that we do that hurt us. Now, I can't tell you how old my daughter is, because it's so many years now, but I raised her. And I know, even to this day, when she is years old, that whatever harms my daughter, I get angry with. That's the wrath of God. That's God's indignation. And the other thing that goes along with this is the judgment of God. When I was in music school, more than 2 or 3 years ago, we had to try to play all the major instruments. So one of the things I tried to play was a cello. You know, you put this big thing between your legs and you grab the strings and you draw some horsehair across it and goes, Trust me, you do not ever want to invite me to play the cello. Now, I have the great grace of having been raised with a man named Yo-Yo Ma. Yo-Yo Ma is considered the world's greatest cellist. And if you had him playing here and me with my cello next to him, I would feel judged by his excellence. And you would judge me in the same way, too. That's what God's judgment is. When we meet the perfect, we know we're not. It's nothing more than that, but it is exactly that. And so today is a day to consider who we really are in relation to God, with the assurance, yes, that God loves us, that God cares deeply, deeply, deeply about us, that you are precious, precious in his sight, precious to God. And that your relation to God is, in the long run, the most important thing that you have, or that I have. So it is a day to consider, in those days when we might have felt wretched, or we might feel wretched today, it's a day to hear again that God loves you, that Christ gave a life that you might have life, that the Spirit that you were given at baptism is real and moves in your heart and in the depths of your being to bring us home. Have a good Lent.